Hey, everybody, this is Dave Stovall, and you're listening to the Disciple Makers podcast by discipleship.org. Rob Rogers shares his personal journey from addiction to pastoral ministry, highlighting the shift that his church, Grace Chapel, made from a management-focused to a discipleship-centered approach. Let's listen in and hear Rob's story and let it move us forward on our journeys today. Enjoy the episode.
I'm Rob Rogers. I've been serving as a pastor for about 12 years. I've been in vocational ministry for about 20. And before I ever stepped foot in a church, I was coming out of a life of addiction. I was a heroin addict for a number of years, and a couple took me into their home, and they discipled me into the kingdom. And God radically delivered me from addiction, and I've been in discipling ministry ever since. I've been in vocational ministry ever since. And several years after I came to Christ, I took a job at a local church and immediately felt this gravitational pull away from discipling relationships. And I found myself very quickly spending the majority of my time, energy, attention on managing the ministry and managing programs and preferences and power dynamics that were at play. I've just found myself spending all of my time doing something that wasn't what I signed up to do and wasn't what Jesus called us to do. And many of us have felt this pull, and if we're not careful, especially in vocational church work, we can find ourselves kind of resigning ourselves over to this idea that this is just the way the church is and this is just the way it has to be. And what I want to do just for a few minutes here is share some pieces of our specific story, which it's allowed us to shift our culture simply from managing programs or managing ministry and any church work, there's some level of that, to beginning a movement of discipleship in the core of our church that's beginning to gain some traction and momentum within our body. It has been as first. Another way to do it is first Rob, second Rob. So as first Rob said, it's our journey, similar to fellowship, has been anything but easy, but it has been worth it. And what we've done is we've slowly and methodically planted a new clarified culture in an already existing culture. And that culture was primarily attractional. It was more built around sensation and attraction than it was around discipleship. And so a quick overview for you, I'm going to fly by these fairly quickly. Three big steps that we've taken as a whole, as a church body at Grace Chapel, and then we've implemented these steps in our specific ministry areas to make sure that everybody is aligned with disciple making. And so what did we do? Three specific things. We evaluate the outcomes, we clarify the culture and vision, and we adjust the systems. So we evaluate the outcomes. One of the first questions that you have to ask is, what are we producing in the lives of the people that are participating in the life of the church? The people that God has called us to love and serve and shepherd and support and disciple, what is being produced in their lives? And in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus specifically tells us, you will know them by their fruit. And so what fruit is being produced? And, one of the things that I experienced, so there were several weeks in a row where somebody right after second service, they come up to me and they go, hey, I don't mean to be offensive, but could I buy you a new pair of shoes? I go, you don't like my shoes? They go, they didn't like the brand that I was wearing, so they wanted to buy me a new pair of shoes. Somebody else came up and said, well, you need to button up your flannel when you're preaching because I don't really enjoy seeing your t-shirt. These are some of the things that you have to deal with when you're in vocational ministry. So the other thing that happened, we had a guy who really, really, really wanted to be an elder. We wouldn't make him an elder. And he left the church mad because we wouldn't make him an elder, which was a confirmation that we had made the right decision, right? So there are things like this that you have to deal with in ministry. There's people that want you to be more political in your preaching. There's people who want you to be less political in your preaching. And one of the things that we've wrestled with, that I've personally wrestled with, is what are we doing? Because our people, some of our people care far more about the clothing that the pastor wears than they do about the fact that there are millions and millions of people that are going to spend eternity without Jesus, right? What are we doing as the Western church? And so it just forced us to get brutally honest as some of these conversations were unfolding. And as we continued to evaluate the fruit, we had to get honest with ourselves. And what we found is there were little pockets where there was lasting, meaningful character change, but it wasn't because of us. It was in spite of us. It wasn't because of what we were doing in the rhythms of the church. It was because of their commitment to following Jesus in spite of the things that we were doing that were hindering that. And so we had to get brutally honest with ourselves about what we were creating, what the rhythms of the church were, and were we actually helping people grow in the character of Jesus? And one of the hardest realities for a pastor or for a leader or for anyone leading a ministry team or leading volunteers to face is that people will do what you do, not what you say. People will replicate what you demonstrate. It's like parenting. Your children become who you are, not what you say. Right? They model what they see. They practice what they see, not what you say. And so we began to realize that, you know, we shouldn't be surprised when people don't do what we teach from the pulpit if we're not modeling it for them. If we're not living lives with them where we can show them what it means to follow Jesus, we shouldn't expect them to actually learn how to follow Jesus. And so we made some really hard decisions because from the outside, the church looked like it was thriving. It was large. There was a lot of people showing up at any of our gatherings or events. I mean, there's a lot going on, a lot of activity, a lot of hurried activity. But on the inside, there was little pockets of fruit here and there, but there was little evidence of meaningful, consistent character change in the lives of our people. So we first had to evaluate the outcomes and get very honest with ourselves about what we saw in the lives of our people. Now, the next piece of this is we had to clarify the vision. And this should say clarify culture and vision, because what we needed to do is say, okay, we're not making disciples. We're making something else. We're not seeing character change in the lives of our people. So what is it that God has called us to be? Who has he called us to be, and what has he called us to do? Who are we, and where is God taking us? And the question that's hard for church leaders to answer is, to honestly answer, is this question, is being large the goal? Is having a large church the goal? Because I promise you, if you're in church work, you might say, no, well, we're at a discipleship conference, so no, of course not, it's discipleship, okay? But we're all behaving in ways that would say, no, discipleship isn't the goal, being large is the goal. So we would say, we would confess that discipleship is the goal, but in practice, we would say being large is the goal. And so we have to get brutally honest with ourselves. How are we measuring success? How do we measure success? Because if we were to use the world standards in measuring Jesus' work with his guys early on, I mean, before Pentecost, we would have looked at Jesus and gone, this is a horrendous failure. He only has 12 guys, and one of them bailed, right? This looks awful. And so how does Jesus measure success? Right, and so we made some major adjustments in what we prioritize as the church, and so we implemented tools and rhythms and support and systems that actually helped our people and helped us as a staff, helped our elders, our leadership team, helped everybody in the community prioritize not just saying that we're Christians, but actually practicing the ways of Christ. Actually living out, like what Rob's talking about, how do we help our people actually implement and practice following Jesus in order to bring about real lasting character change? So we began with the leadership, because the reality is, if it's not true with us, it's not going to be true with them. If we're not living it, they're not going to. Because again, they're not going to do what you say, they're going to do what you do. And so are we modeling this? Are we growing in this? And as we've implemented this, it's interesting, as these things have steadily seeped their way into the life of our congregation, what we've found, what we discovered, is that there were some people that were going, oh, thank God, we've been waiting for this. We're so excited. We're all in. And then there were other people. And there were other people that left mad. They left angry. They could not stand that we were calling them to actually practice the ways of Jesus. Why? Because they just wanted to show up and hear great music and a great sermon and go home and call it good. They actually didn't want to follow Jesus. They just wanted to consume. And it turns out when you actually call people to character change and character transformation and mean it, they will leave. And they will leave mad. Galatians chapter 5, verse 24, it says, those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. When you call people, when you actually invite people into the crucifixion of their flesh, they leave mad because they don't want to do it. It feels like a death because it is a death. You are crucifying your flesh, right? So following Jesus, there is a cost associated with this, and it's a very deep and personal cost. But we were committed to this, and we've lost a lot of people because of our commitment to this. And they've left mad. And if you've experienced rapid growth in your local church, you're welcome. It was us. All right. As we've, the thing that we've realized is that is we've been able to articulate who we are and who we are not. It has given people the opportunity to make an informed decision on whether they want to opt in or opt out. Right? If your culture is ambiguous, people will make it whatever they want it to be. But if you're clear on who you are and where God is taking you, about the accepted norms and behaviors on your staff, in your church family, in your body, and you measure that against Scripture, and you actually call people to it and hold people accountable to it that genuinely want to follow Jesus, it gives them the opportunity to make an informed decision on whether or not they want to be in or out. And I can tell you where God has taken us. So I stepped into my role as the senior pastor in January of 21. And it's been an incredibly beautiful journey. It's been an incredibly painful journey. If you're local, you probably know or have heard some of our story. But I can tell you, I am thrilled about the people who have hung in with us, because the people who have stayed through our journey don't need to be coaxed or prodded or convinced or cajoled into following Jesus. They're there because they want to follow Jesus, because they want to become like Jesus, because they want to live on mission with Jesus. And so we're all aligned and pulling the same direction. It's amazing to see. So last step, if we are going to do this well, we have to adjust the systems. I love the way that James Clear says it in his book, Atomic Habits. He says, we do not rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. And you can say that your goal is disciple making, but if you do not adjust the community rhythms, if you do not adjust the practices in your community that in a way that aligns with the goal of disciple making, you will not make disciples. You will not have a culture of disciple making. So we began to make a whole host of adjustments, most of them internal, some external. We restructured our entire staff. We restructured how we're doing coaching and development with our team. We've completely revamped what our membership process. And so now membership, in order to become a member of the church, there is a level of commitment to practicing the ways of Jesus. There's spiritual practices that are involved in it. And so there's accountability and there's support in that. And so we've revamped it to not be about membership to a club, but about apprenticeship to Jesus. And I want to show you one very practical tool, just to get very specific, a practical tool that that we've leveraged over the last, we've been building it over the last 10 months. We've leveraged some of Patrick Lencioni's work. Patrick is a believer and he's an incredible business writer, consultant, and in his book, The Ideal Team Player, We worked our way through that and adopted some of the language, redefined some terms, and implemented a process for our team. And as we walk through this 10-month process with our staff, we put in a lot of time and effort and energy to gain a level of clarity that the church has never had before. And so what's important for you to know is we didn't talk to you about our systems here in a second, but our core values are humble, healthy, and hungry. And so we boiled it down to three. Now, here, you need to know, we didn't just say, these are our values and wrote them down and hung them on a wall and that's it, right? We realized that we needed to work with our staff, our team, our leadership, and go, what are some of the things that we collectively value together? What do we live out? What do we see being practiced here that's healthy and right and good that aligns with God's kingdom? And we're in the middle, so just full transparency, we're still in the middle of rolling some of this out. But what we found is that we've begun experiencing the fruit of this work far long before we actually clarified some of these words and definitions, which I'll talk about. So here's what I would ask of you. I'm going to show you some specifics. Don't copy and paste this over your culture. Don't just show up back at your context or your church and go, okay, well, we're just going to, you know, here's our values, humble, healthy, and hungry. You got to work with your people over a long period of time to bring clarity and definition to that. But here's what our values are. So humble, we have a definition for these. So humble is accurately knowing our identity and calling in Christ. Healthy is consistently growing in Christ-likeness within biblical community. And hungry is proactively achieving personal and team goals. Now, we have specific behaviors under each of these categories that we measure. And so all of our hiring and selection of new employees is based on this. Coaching and development for every one of our staff members and volunteers eventually is going to be based on this. All of our discipling relationships and conversations are based on this. So team culture is based on this. My behavior on the staff is based on this. And there's specific behaviors that align with this. So let me just give you hungry, because that's probably the most ambiguous for you. Hungry, the specific practices under hungry. So each one of these practices is measurable. So hungry, practice regular rhythms of rest. That seems counterintuitive, right? If you're hungry, if you're ambitious, you think you're going to be a go-getter. This is, if you're actually going to live in healthy relationship with God and be able to do what God has called you to do, you have to rest well, right? So practice regular rhythms of rest, seek feedback with a desire to grow. So you're hungry to learn. Practice work-life integration. So you have healthy rhythms and healthy expectations around how much you're working and how much you're resting. Hold people accountable to their personal care. Make every effort to grow in the disciplines of a disciple. That's about practicing the ways of Jesus. Committed to clear and consistent communication across departments. Engage in conflict when needed, as outlined in Matthew 18. And seek to empathize with and understand the people we work with. So each one of these specific behaviors is measurable, because here's the reality. Programs, the success of our programs is often measured by numbers. Discipleship is measured by behavior. Programs are measured by numbers. Discipleship is measured by behavior. Matthew 7, verse 24, Jesus says, "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock." Luke 6, 40, "A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher." It's putting the ways of Jesus into practice. And if you don't have clarity on your values, you can't measure behavior. If you can't measure behavior, you can't effectively create a culture where discipleship is happening. Right? You can't effectively develop someone or create a disciple-making culture. And one of the things that we also have are self and team assessments that we use on our staff as well. So personal story. When we first started implementing this, one of the pieces of feedback I received from my team was that I was doing a poor job of intentionally investing in some of our other pastors and leaders. So I had a team of people, we're going through, they're all giving me feedback. This is one of the ones that stood out. And I'm looking around the table and everybody's going, yeah, you're not doing a good job of this. I'm going, okay, in my mind, I'm prioritizing discipleship because I love discipleship. I came into the kingdom through discipleship. I'm preaching about discipleship, but I wasn't practicing it. I wasn't doing it with the team. And so they gave me feedback. There was an avenue for them to be honest with me about ways that I was failing as a disciple maker. And immediately it gave me the opportunity to change what I was practicing and change some priorities in my weekly schedule. So it was incredibly valuable feedback that I needed to hear. And this is one of the things that gives us opportunity to look at the people that we work with all the time and go, hey, we've all agreed that this is what we need to do. And so we want to help each other do that. So as a leader and as a pastor, this has been incredibly helpful for me, for our team, for our culture, and for the core of our church. Three steps: evaluate the outcomes, clarify culture and vision, and adjust the systems. Thanks so much.
Today is the day for the National Disciple Making Forum. We're kicking off at 11 o'clock today. This is Wednesday, May 1st. If you are in the Indianapolis area, come on out to Mount Pleasant Christian Church and join us for this amazing event. We would love to see you there. All right, up next, we're going to be hearing from both Robs, Rob Sweet and Rob Rogers, as our point leader, Bobby Harrington, interviews them in a Q&A style session about the topics that they just talked about. So please hit the subscribe button, come back, and listen to more episodes of the Disciple Makers podcast. I really appreciate you being here and listening to what we're putting out. Enjoy the rest of your day and come back for more. We'll see you.